you know, to get the best training that they possibly could. It can be anywhere. Just about every city offers.
You know, I was wondering, you know, if she could keep on, because the force, it's got a lot of power, and it makes me feel like it makes me feel like it.
You're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
I want to tell you, my head is filled with things to say.
What do you appreciate about WGXC? What shows really light you up? Which programmers do you connect to? Call us at 518-622-2598 extension 4 and leave us a message. Or email us at feedback@wgxc.org. We'd love to hear from you.
Waveforms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Rita Chuck Patrosakis of St. Paul, Minnesota. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Upstate Films, a nonprofit theater connecting the Hudson Valley through transformative cinematic experiences in both Rhinebeck and Saugerties. This month, playing Wisdom of Happiness, Anemone, Begonia, and a lineup of special programming from Upstate Films' Art House and Revival House series. Information about screenings and special guests at upstatefilms.org.
90.7 FM.
Accra, Hudson, Catskill.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, October 29th. Local early morning temperatures range from 36 degrees in Skodak to 41 in Copaig. Regional average soil temperature is 47 degrees. Air quality today will be good. Temperatures make it up to 54 degrees at 4 p.m. Skies will be mostly cloudy, setting up for the rain that will fall overnight as temperatures slip to 42 degrees. Tomorrow, rain all day, high of 56 happens at dusk. Rain continues overnight as temperatures gently dip to 48 degrees. Friday, still rainy, high of 56. Saturday, high of 53, rain should come to an end in the morning for most of us. A few people may see some last into the afternoon. Sunset today will be at 5:41 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:21 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 1%. Plasma winds will be average at 469 kilometers per second, with an average density of 6 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently impacted above 17 megahertz. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 91, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
We'll be right back.
Public News Service Wednesday afternoon update. I'm Mike Clifford. The eye of Hurricane Melissa made landfall in Cuba early this morning, passing over the long, thin island's eastern shore, leaving Cubans huddled in the dark, many far from home. The country evacuated about 750,000 people. That from the New York Times. They report Tuesday Melissa's center sliced through Jamaica, where boats washed ashore, roofs blew away, and trees splintered under 185-mile-per-hour winds. Officials reported catastrophic damage. Most people there cut off from the internet and major airports are closed. Meantime, Rocky Mountain Power customers and clean energy advocates are gathering in Laramie today for a people's hearing on the utility's latest integrated resource plan. The plan filed by the parent company PacifiCorp commits to burning fossil fuels in Wyoming over the next 20 years while pulling back on solar and wind investment.
Laramie resident Tanner Ewalt says now is the time to take advantage of expiring federal tax credits. Utility companies have until July of next year to begin construction on clean energy projects, but Tanner says PacifiCorp currently has no plans to break ground.
From what I understand, it's about $2 billion that PacifiCorp is missing out on. That's $2 billion we're missing out on. It feels downright foolish not to try to take advantage of that.
According to Sierra Club projections, extending the use of fossil fuels would leave more than 100,000 Wyomingites vulnerable to higher energy bills, largely due to volatile global coal and gas markets. I'm Eric Galatas.
And an innovative foster care program in Northwest Ohio is saving taxpayer dollars while improving outcomes for children with complex needs.
A new study from Ohio University's Voinovich School finds the pilot program that began in Sandusky County generated more than $2 million in what it calls social value, or about $4 for every dollar invested. The initiative trains and licenses treatment-level foster parents so kids in the system can remain near their families instead of being sent to distant group homes. Melanie Allen, director of Sandusky County Job and Family Services, says building this local network has changed everything for their region.
By licensing our own treatment foster homes, we were able to keep kids closer to home, avoid separating siblings, reduce caseworker travel, and reunify children with their parents more quickly.
Farah Siddiqui reporting.
Next, nearly half of doctors' offices are now consolidated within hospital systems, a trend that's contributing to higher costs and fewer services, especially in rural areas. Dr. Savannah Castori is with Northwest Endeavor Surgery in Richland, Washington.
We are just averaging things and cutting things and figuring out how to make things work, or cutting staff and take less salary. There are a few months I had to go without pay to make these things work.
He says private practices like his are struggling in part because Medicare reimbursements have not kept up with the cost of providing services. This is Public News Service. As rural communities in Wisconsin grapple with the increasing uncertainty of federal policies and the government shutdown, local farmers are asking Congress and the administration to prioritize federal policies that support rural America.
A new Rural Policy Action report offers suggestions for improving small-town life and businesses in the U.S. Danielle Endvik with Wisconsin Farmers Union says rural communities often feel overlooked by federal decisions. She hopes the report will bring them back to the policymaking table by offering concrete solutions to problems that she says threaten the livelihood of rural Wisconsin.
At the crux of it, it shows that rural America deserves more than Band-Aids. It's giving us a bolder blueprint of how we can address fair competition, affordable health care and health insurance, better infrastructure, stewardship of our land.
The report also makes the case for lawmakers to rein in corporate power and do more to support workers, small businesses, and farmers, including reestablishing anti-discrimination policies and lending practices and investing in renewable energy. I'm Judith Ruiz Branch reporting.
Next to Central Kentucky, where immigrant and Spanish-speaking residents have had greater access to resources and support, that's ever since Centro de San Juan Diego opened in 2020.
Its co-founder Jim Bennett says the demand for mental health and social work services has increased since the pandemic. He adds the families who rely on the center often face overwhelming barriers to care.
Stress, depression, suicidal thoughts, domestic violence and abuse, sexual abuse, marital problems.
According to the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, around 180,000 immigrants live in the Commonwealth and play an increasing role in the state's economy. In 2022, immigrants made up 2% of both the workforce and business owners. This is Nadia Romlagan for Kentucky News Connection.
Finally, with the Trump administration's decision to allow food assistance to lapse in November, fears of hunger crisis are growing in North Carolina and across the country.
The White House says it will not distribute funds in November for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, because of the federal government shutdown. 1.4 million North Carolinians rely on SNAP to put food on the table, including more than 580,000 children. Jason Canawati-Stefani with the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina says communities in the state were facing the greatest hunger crisis in a generation even before the shutdown and cuts to SNAP passed under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. He notes that 4 in 5 households participating in SNAP in North Carolina contain a child, senior, or a person with a disability.
We're talking about a move by the federal government that is going to significantly increase hunger among our most vulnerable families here in North Carolina and across the country.
I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. Member and listener supported. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In 1944, when Franklin Roosevelt said he would run for a 4th term, discussions began on a constitutional amendment to limit a U.S. president to 2 terms in office. In 1951, the 22nd Amendment was ratified. Now, a Tennessee congressman wants to repeal it. Would it actually be possible for Donald Trump to be president again? January 23rd, Representative Andy Ogles introduced a joint resolution proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the United States to provide that no person shall be elected to the office of the president more than three times. While the resolution received a lot of attention, constitutional amendments require a two-thirds majority in Congress and be ratified by three-quarters of the states, neither of which is likely. Trump himself has flirted with the idea of staying in the presidency. The Hill reported Trump told GOP leaders, quote, "I suspect I won't be running again unless you do something. Unless you say, he's so good, we just have to figure it out." A recent Politico article explained another scenario where a loophole in the 22nd Amendment could allow another presidential candidate to run with Donald Trump as vice president. The new president would then step down, allowing Trump to become president again. A 1999 Minnesota Law Review article discusses this and other such vaguely legal maneuvers as well. Unlikely, yes. Out of the question, no. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Thank you. Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Millions nationwide are about to miss food stamps. These are needy folks who need some help with groceries. They're not going to be able to get it. Why? Because the Democrats continue this temper tantrum.
Missouri Republican Senator Josh Hawley blames Democrats for the month-long shutdown's impact on veterans, farmers, and hungry families. Federal nutrition aid is now on pause in half of states, threatening the November SNAP benefits for millions. The USDA says it would need more than $8 billion to keep the program running. Virginia Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin has declared a state of emergency there. He says the state will use emergency reserves to protect SNAP benefits for almost a million people during what he calls the Democrat shutdown. Images out Thursday show the entire White House East Wing reduced to rubble as crews clear space for President Donald Trump's $300 million ballroom. Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt insists the, quote, modernization effort won't interfere with operations. Trump is backing away from plans to deploy troops to San Francisco after pushback from Mayor Daniel Lurie and tech executives. The president says he'll give the city a chance to handle crime on its own. A Virginia federal judge is ordering schools on military bases to return hundreds of books to the shelves. The ACLU attorney Emerson Sykes argued the purge of so-called woke material violated deep-rooted student First Amendment protections.
We have long had precedent that says that when this sort of censorial impulse arises, the First Amendment steps in to protect students' rights.
Titles that had been banned from Defense Department libraries included Love is Love, Sparkle Boy, and White Fragility. The ACLU is also criticizing the tactics of an FBI-led Idaho raid. Police and immigration officers stormed a family horse racing event, detaining hundreds, including children, while investigating illegal gambling. Rebecca De Leon is with the group there.
We saw quite young children, maybe 10 years old or a little younger, who were zip-tied. We have evidence of bruises on their wrists from being zip-tied, and we think that there is absolutely zero justification for that.
The FBI denies using rubber bullets on minors. Civil rights groups say the operation is feeding fear in the local Latino community. The controversy comes as federal authorities are charging 30 people, including an NBA coach and players, on mafia-linked gambling charges. A ProPublica investigation into U.S. citizens detained by immigration agents is prompting Congress to look into enforcement practices. Andrew Free with the hashtag Detention Kills Project says he found hundreds of people died in custody over the last decade and a half, with their deaths remaining hidden.
What I fear is there are people who are dying in state or local custody whose deaths are never being reported publicly. What is the true number of people dying in ICE custody? I don't actually know, and I don't think anybody does.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
silence.